Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 10th, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, the second round of homebrewer David Curtis's hopping technique experiment. In the first round, David explored the differences between mash hopping, first wort hopping, and traditional 60-minute hopping. How will doubling the amount of hops used affect the results? Stay tuned to find out. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on the Google Plus, too. And thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. I'm sure you are well aware of how that works. Whenever you're thinking of shopping on Amazon, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page. It will take you to Amazon.com. You can shop as you normally do. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. So we greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate your support when you do that. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. And we've apparently got a Windows app as well. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're just everywhere. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at basicbrewingshop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And there's room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of brew. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who's done so already. Protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. And finally, our Basic Brewing bottle openers are in the store and headed out the door. And for a limited time, you can get a free bottle opener. A free bottle opener with the purchase of any of our DVD combos. So that is a great deal. Monday will mark the 9th anniversary of the founding of this podcast, which means that we'll be entering our 10th year of production, of course. It's crazy. I've often said that when Andy Sparks and I sat down in the back of his homebrew shop to record on July 14th, 2005, that I thought maybe I could squeeze 10 episodes worth of material out of the topic. Not 10 years. Had no idea. But here we are around 425 episodes later. And it's thanks to your support and your helping to provide content and your moral support, financial support, all that we've been able to keep going for so long. So thank you very, very much. And there's a lot more good stuff to come. Also, on sort of a personal note, this week marks the one-year anniversary of our friend Alan going into the hospital and nearly dying. You met Alan in our Flipside episode where Alan talked about the negative and potentially deadly side of alcohol. And this is a serious topic, but we got a lot of good response from that episode. And you'll be glad to know that Alan has remained sober for the past year. He's gotten a much better job and has started a relationship with a beautiful woman. So, so it's been a good year. Started off bad, but he is in great shape. So I'm proud of him for making a change, a positive change in his life, and it's really paid off. So that is a wonderful reason to celebrate. Let's take a look into the mailbag before we move on. Dan from Edinburgh writes, "Hey James, I really enjoyed the conversation with Tonsmeyer, but thought I'd expand on something he mentioned. Attached is the research paper he mentioned on Cantillon." And Dan sent me a PDF. He says it identifies four phases of lambic fermentation. Number one, enteric. Number two, primary fermentation. Number three, acidification. And four, maturation. It's this first phase that contains the nasty microbes that Michael alluded to, which include the bug that causes pneumonia and E. coli. Though enteric DNA was found throughout the 2 years the study was conducted, They start to become dormant at pH below 4 and ABV above 2%. This phase lasts for 30 to 40 days. So Dan says, I'd suggest that homebrewers attempting a lambic not taste their beer until these conditions are met or until about a month has passed. Or as Mike suggested, they can lower the pH with acid to prevent them from proliferating in the first place. The paper also suggests that acidification doesn't begin until 3 to 4 months in, so people shouldn't expect a whole lot of souring to occur until then. Very cool. I appreciate that, Dan. You know, I've wondered for years about the safety of quote-unquote spontaneous fermentation and just leaving wort out to sort of spoil on its own. So it's good to see some data. It's always better to be safe than sorry, of course. And this may also pertain to the question of whether it's safe to store unfermented wort long-term in no-chill containers as well, on the off chance that some nasty bugs do get in there. They could be happy. I'm working on the email backlog that happened as a result of my being away and on vacation, but I'm still woefully behind in doing that, so I hope to get fully caught up by the end of the week. I appreciate your patience. I also hope to bottle my version of a cream ale this week, too. And I hope to feature that in a future Basic Brewing video episode of that, if that turns out well. Well, as I mentioned last week, we've got some great stuff coming up that we recorded in Michigan at and around the Homebrewers Conference. I was looking at the files today, and it's going to be difficult to decide what to put on next. All of it is great stuff. So if you're listening and you were recorded when we were up there and you're the last in line, don't worry. It's not. I'm thinking of like putting numbers in a bag or something and picking them out to determine what's up next. The conversation in this episode is one that I wanted to get out fairly quickly because it's a follow-up from a previous episode that I put out on May 8th. David Curtis is the manager of the homebrew shop associated with the Bell's Eccentric Cafe in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And David decided to use the resources at Bell's Brewing to help evaluate a homebrew experiment comparing mash hopping, first wort hopping, and standard 60-minute hopping. And if you haven't listened to the May 8th episode yet, you might want to do that before you listen to this week's show, just to get you some background information. It's very interesting stuff. As a follow-up to that first experiment, David decided to double the amount of hops that he used to see what a difference that made, and we joined him at Bell's in Kalamazoo to taste those results for ourselves. Here we are in Kalamazoo, Michigan, in the green room backstage at the... where are we, David?
This is the Bell's Eccentric Cafe. This is the back room's green room, kind of a private area.
How would you like to play this joint?
I'd love it. There's a great stage, good food, and great beer.
What do you think, Andy?
I really like this place a lot. I really like the garden area outside. There's a bandstand out there as well. Yeah, if you're ever in Kalamazoo, make it a point to come here.
So that's Andy Sparks. Previously was Steve Wilkes, and then David Curtis is joining us with the second round of an experiment that you might have heard if you listen to the archives or if you follow the show, testing three different hopping methods. And David, kind of give us a refresher of the experiment and what occurred during the first round.
Okay. The experiment was kind of a way to maybe isolate the effects of first wort hopping primarily, as well as mash hopping. And the idea the way I pursued it was to brew three batches. One was a control batch, which had just a 60-minute boil addition, a second batch, which had just a first wort hop addition with the exact same amount of hops, and then an only mash hopped version to as well. The idea is to use the same amount of hops, the same base grain bill, and then just the only difference is the placement of the hops. And the first time we tried it, it was pretty much the mash hopped beer really stood out, at least to most tasters, I think, and you guys as well, that it was, you know, clearly the different beer of the three. and the first wort and the 60-minute edition were much closer. And so this this second round, the second time I did it here, I doubled up the hops to try to make the hops more prominent, hoping that maybe instead of saying, here's three malty beers, what do you think the difference is between the hops, maybe the hops jump out a little more in this one.
And this, I was expecting this round to be a lot easier than the first round because you're using so much more hops in these beers. But we seem to be having more difficulty this time, Steve.
I think it's a lot tougher call today. I have my theory about which is which, but they're not anywhere near as... well, the mash-only hop is much more hidden.
So, Andy, you didn't get to play along with the first round, but what do you think? Is this easy or tough?
This is pretty tough. You know, I think I know which one is the mash hop, but it is tough. And between all three of them, you know, they're very similar in a lot of ways. It would have been interesting to do the first experiment as well and see the difference between those. This is a great experiment that folks can do at home.
So we seem to have some impressions, and they may be different impressions. So maybe we should go around and kind of talk about what we perceive.
Okay, I'll do that. Beer number one seems to be to my nose and palate, it's really aromatic. It does have kind of there's a little bit of a wang in the bouquet to it.
I hate it when there's a wang in the bouquet.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a southern term. But it tastes good. The second beer to me is the hoppiest, and the third beer is very mild. It's very smooth. That would be my choice for the mash-only the mash-only beer.
You know, as I went through them, the very first beer has a subtle kind of a green apple character to it, but it also, I think, has a slightly more sweet finish. I'm going to say I think that is the mash-only hop. I think the two beers after that are much closer together as far as total bitterness level and drinkability level. One has a much smoother finish. I'm really interested to see if that's the first wort hop or whether it's just the standard boil for 60 minutes. I'm going to be really curious. If I was going to place a guess, I would say number one is the mash only, number two is the one that's the boil 60 minutes, and number three is the first wort hop.
I'm going to go next because David knows the answer.
Yes.
So, but in smelling these, to me, number three had the most subtle hop aroma. And of course, we're all jumping out right on a limb, committing to all these things. But I think Andy is right that number one does have kind of a, I guess I would classify it as kind of a cidery flavor. I'm gonna say that I'm going to pick number three as being the mash hop, just because of that first impression on the first pour of the aroma coming off. I just didn't get the hop character. But I got to be honest, I mean, the bitterness levels between these three, maybe number three is a bit smoother, but it's pretty close, and maybe because I've been drinking hoppy beers today, but I might have blown my palate out. But David, if you could, by not revealing the answers, just kind of give your impressions of what you're tasting.
I definitely get number one has a kind of a sharp hop character that we were talking about earlier. It's almost like fermenting beer, like when you walk into a cellar at a brewery or something like that, and there's a lot of fermenting going on. There's like a cidery kind of thing that kind of, and these are cascade hops, so I don't know if it's maybe just, you know, the higher use of cascade maybe stands out that way. B has that same kind of character a little bit, or two, I guess it's number two, has that same sort of character, but it's much more subdued than the first one. But the bitterness levels between those two, to me, seem somewhat in check with each other. And then number three doesn't seem to have that. Everything seems rounder and more subdued, even more, I would say. So one definitely has the sharpest, at least to me, has the sharpest character from the hops.
I tasted the dregs again, and I'm getting less bitterness from three. Maybe it's because I'm just listening to what you're saying, David.
And I've got more if you need refills.
I get less bitterness from three. I get the most bitterness character from two, but I do think one and two have the most in common.
Okay.
So do you? I'm sorry. Did you say which you thought was first word and which was the control?
I think that the control is number one. I think first word's number two, and I think number three is the mash only. Mm. That's my pick.
I thought I already committed.
I can't remember.
I'll be glad to go over it again.
I can't remember.
yeah. So I think number one is the mash hop, number two is the boil, and number three is the first wort hop.
Okay.
Wow, this is cool.
All right, and you do have sensory panel data this time as well. So
yeah, it's a little more smaller sample size this time. It was actually just done today. I think he said five out of six or six out of seven tasters chose number two as the most hop character. Mm. It's basically how he just kind of said which beer has the most hop character. It wasn't rate these or anything like that. We only gave them two beers. Actually, I should say that the taste panel this time I only gave them the first wort and the 60-minute edition because last time it was such a standout with the mash hop. So we gave them two and said which one has the most character. They chose predominantly the first wort hop.
Okay. So, I mean, shall we unveil which is which? And then do you have lab data as well?
I do.
Oh,
I've got the IBU numbers here.
It's all fancy and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, yeah, let's talk about the numbers before we unveil the actual what's what.
Okay. the 60-minute edition had 31.2 IBUs. And I should say that I used software to calculate the IBUs on this, and it was something like 68 IBUs using like the Tensith formula. So that's another experiment in itself, but it was considerably lower, and the last time was the same way. It was like 40 calculated and 20 actual. So the 60-minute edition was 31.2. The first wort hop was 33.7, so a couple points higher. Mm. And the mash hop was 10.8 IBUs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so we embargoed the IBU numbers from the first round because you're going to give your presentation. So what were the IBU numbers from the first round?
The first round, if people don't remember, it was half the amount of hops is what we're having today. It was 1 ounce in a 3-gallon batch. The control batch, which is the 60-minute edition, was 19.6 IBUs. The first wort hop was 21.6, so just a hair more, two IBUs more, I guess, and then 5.7 IBUs for the mash hop, so considerably less.
So a radical difference.
Yeah, but it is consistent from round one to round two as far as the proportion, you know, from first wort to, which makes me happy. That was the thing I was worried about, that they were going to be all over the place or something, but they... You definitely get more out of a first wort hop IBU-wise, and you definitely get much less out of a mash hop IBU-wise.
It would have been interesting to go through different formulas, like the Daniels and the, you know, to see if anybody was closer to the actual numbers. But I mean, you know, then again, people who listen to the podcast have heard me many times up on my soapbox about the IBU calculation formulas and how you should just use them as a ballpark guideline and not think that just because you put something through a calculator, you're going to actually get those IBUs.
Right. Yeah, that's something that that I had planned to discuss at my presentation is that, you know, this is all relative to your home brewery. I think if your perception of what calculated 200 IBUs is at your house is, you know, it may actually only be 20 IBUs, but that's what you think it is. And as long as you brew and scale things based on that, you're going to be just fine. It's not really that important what the lab actually says something is.
But again, the takeaway is that the hops that were in contact with the wort longer, the first wort addition, yielded higher IBUs.
Yep. And I mean, I guess technically mash hops are in contact even longer, but I'm guessing those acids don't make their way from the mash tun to the kettle either. So yeah, as expected, I think the results, if you look at the IBU levels that I got from the lab, it was pretty much kind of, you know, what I expect. I didn't know how low mash hops would actually be on the scale. I knew they'd be down there, or I thought they'd be down there. But things really weren't that surprising. The 60-minute was, you know, in one spot, and the first wort was slightly above that, and then the mash was considerably lower than both. So,
what are the actual? How did we do on our green room sensory panel?
Steve nailed it. Number one was the 60-minute, two was the first wort hop, and number three was the mash hop.
Wow. I do have a question about the mash hop. Were the hops leaf hops, whole hops, or were they pelletized? I assume pelletized?
Yep, they were pelletized. I actually crushed my grain and threw the hops right in on top of the grain before I even doughed in, and so everything got doughed in together. I do have an electric system in my basement. It's a Herms, so I recirculate the mash the entire time. That may have some effect as opposed to someone that maybe just leaves it in a cooler and lets it sit over 60 minutes. I do a mash out at the end of it. That, you know, those are all factors that could play a little role in it. But I think for the most part, if you were to do this at home, you may see similar results. But there is, I mean, especially with this one, that, you know, the first time we did it, I was so bummed because the the mash hop was so low in hop character, and this one is actually one of my favorite beers of the three. Is the mash
really quite good?
Yeah,
yeah.
From the third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite. Yeah, it's a light blonde, you know, maybe a blonde ale or something like that, but it's a nice rounded beer, I think.
Which doesn't mean that it's different from putting a smaller amount of hops in the boil kettle as opposed to putting a larger amount of hops in the mash tun.
Yeah. Yeah, the rule or the what most people think is that a mash hop is a waste of hops, and I think that's probably probably the case. You could certainly use a lot less hops somewhere else and maybe get the same or similar results. It is pretty round, though, so I guess I don't know. The issue that I see usually with mash hopping is that it's usually on double IPAs where you're just trying to fit hops in everywhere you can. So those hops really get lost in all the dry hopping and all the late additions that you're doing anyway. So it's kind of, you know, there's really not a big point to it unless you've got hops to get rid of. But to use mash hops on their own or maybe with one or two other additions, I don't know that makes a ton of sense.
It may be interesting. I'm reading Tonsmeyer's book on sour beers, and, you know, it could be that maybe there's a strategy that it would be useful if you're making a sour beer with a low IBU level. If you're using, say, aged hops or something like that, it might be fun to, you know, put those into the mash so that you're getting a lower IBU level, but you're still using, you know, there may be an application for mash wort hopping, but for making a non-sour hoppy beer, you know, just like a standard pale ale, it doesn't seem like it's the most effective way to go.
Yeah, the only time I've ever used it was on a Berliner Weiss, and I used the hops in the cereal mash phase of the mash, and it provided a very, very low, you know, in the neighborhood of 3 to 5 IBUs, but it was appropriate for the style.
But didn't you also use those in, like, a boiling a decoction as well?
Right, that was the cereal mash, so as I did that part, the hops were in that part, so they were actually boiled, but with the mash and then added to the total grain to you know, to get the beer, and it produced a delicious beer with a very subtle bitterness. It worked great.
I will say too that mash hops really make your brewery smell nice. if nothing else it's the mix of that big malty smell when you're emptying out a mash tun along with some hops is pretty tasty.
What do you I mean I In number one, I did get the kind of cidery character that Andy was talking about. Was that noted in other sample bottles from this beer?
Yeah, in fact, last night was the first time I actually sampled this beer, and I haven't pulled a lot from it because this is the one that I'm going to be pouring at the presentation. So I wanted to save as much as I could, but I did notice it right up front when I first tasted these batches. I could smell it right away, and it was something that kind of concerned me. But I do think it's evident in number two a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessarily, something that there could be some fermentation issues there. But I will say that they were all fermented together in the same room. I did as best, the same way I did it the first time. My numbers that I got from the lab all are consistent, so I'm pretty confident with, attenuation amounts and things like that were all right in check with each other. So,
but the numbers don't lie. I mean, the lab detected IBUs, I mean, they don't lie. I mean, you can't, fermentation artifacts or whatever,
yeah,
don't count in that at all. So at least, as far as a lab process has confirmed, that this second round confirmed the results from the first round as far as the IBU or the alpha acid utilization and isomerization.
Yep. Yeah, and that's, the whole idea behind this project was about numbers, to me at least. It was less about, which tastes better or which tastes rounder or whatever. I really wanted to put numbers on what should I put in my calculator when I'm doing a mash hop or when I'm doing a first wort hop. Should I increase the bitterness or decrease it and things like that? So it was more about the numbers, having taste panel and having you guys try it, and whoever else tried it was more of a side note to the numbers that I really was collecting. So I'm a numbers guy. I like to know what to expect when I put something in my brewing software.
I think you should write the next IBU utilization formula. So somebody needs to find some time to do a formula that actually works and yields, good results.
I have I do have access to this lab, and they always, they always tell me, anytime you want to send a homebrew over to have it analyzed is fine. I've rarely done that, but I have done a few beers in the past that we did for different things down here, and I've sent them to the lab, and they've been pretty close. So this kind of makes me wonder if, it's just different hopping methods that we don't have a good understanding of, or if it's just the way I use them on my system or something like that. So it's... I'm not real sure what happens there, but things are sometimes right where you expect them, and other times they're kind of like this, where they're about half of what you expected, which is very strange to me.
Steve, what are your conclusions?
That numbers are important, but that taste is more important. And so as a home brewer, I really like to know the numbers, so that I can predict what will happen next time. But that only takes me so far. I'm not as concerned about that. A commercial brewer would be very concerned about that for consistency of product, making sure that everybody gets the same thing. That sort of thing is really important to them. It's less important to me. So if I'm brewing a beer from some method that isn't quantifiable, like perhaps mash hopping, but I get the beer I want, like Andy's Berliner Weiss, that's kind of all I need to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty interesting to see how this lays out. I was startled to obviously be completely wrong, and also to find out that there was, perceivable bitterness from the mash hop as well, which I almost expected to be sweet. As a matter of fact, that's the reason I picked the first one, is I perceived it to have a slightly sweeter finish, which is why I thought that maybe it didn't have the hop bitterness to back that up. So... interesting stuff.
Yeah, my takeaway is that, ever since I've heard about first wort hopping, it's been the magical, more rounded bitterness. Even though the hops have been in contact with the hot wort for a longer period of time, that this somehow this magical, more rounded bitterness came from first wort hopping. And, you know, that from just, you know, my brain thinks that's kind of crazy, but and there's nothing in these two experiments that says to me that at least in these settings, in these situations, that first wort hopping contributes a more rounded bitterness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely had the most bitterness character, and so hop character. But if I'm just looking at bitterness in general, I thought the first wort in both times was definitely the most bitter of the three. So,
David the Mythbuster.
Yeah. It's so hard for me because I know which one I'm tasting every time I pick it up. I never had my wife bring me blind samples or anything like that, which I should have done, but I can always talk myself into saying, yeah, this one seems a little more round, but I guess it's not, I mean, you're really splitting hairs. It's not like, I think I'll probably still first wort hop beers just because I like to do things differently now and then, but I don't know that it's the go-to, you know, for, it's not that much different from 60 Minute. I can say that, at least from what I've tasted.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it does taste good, and they both taste good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is there any reason not to first wort hop? I mean, so it's convenient. You don't have to sit there and wait for it to come to boil and then hit my stopwatch. It's like, no, I'm going to throw them in now, and when it comes to a boil, I'm going to boil for 60 minutes.
Yeah, there's nothing that says that it's a bad thing to do.
No.
It just doesn't add the character that I thought that was supposed to happen. But apparently, according to the numbers, if you want to extract more bitterness out of your hops, put them in as soon as you start to collect the wort.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Any other business to address at this meeting of the Green Room Tasting Society?
I'd say no, but more will be revealed later.
All will be revealed.
All right. Well, thanks, David.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Well, thanks again to David and the fine folks at Bell's for helping to do this experiment and for including us. And thanks, as usual, to Andy and Steve. That was a lot of fun. If you're anywhere near Kalamazoo, otherwise known as Kalamazoo, Michigan, you need to visit Bell's Eccentric Cafe. Wonderful food, amazing beer, and the setting is just incredible. Steve, you know, he's a jazz drummer. He was almost literally drooling over the stage inside the building. It's an incredible space. And there's another performance space in the beer garden outside. It's a place that I'd love to visit again. And David showed us around Kalamazoo afterwards, took us to a couple, three more places, and it was a great town. I couldn't stop singing, you know, I Got a Gal in Kalamazoo, and I was like, David, do people just sing that all the time? He's like, I'm not really familiar with that song. He wasn't as familiar with that song as I was, because I'm old. Anyway, more great content from Michigan next week. Until then, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You will find our bottle openers on our shop. Our growler bags are also available on the shop as well. Check out our support link. You can throw us a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you get a free bottle opener included with any of our DVD combos. You can check out our shirts in the store as well as our logbooks. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer, and the calendar is blank in the front, so that even now that it's July, you still have 12 full months of calendar in the book. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that purchased through the link are Renogy 30-amp PWM charge controller regulator off-grid for battery charging. And there was also a solar charger, or a solar panel, that I'm assuming goes along with that. Pretty cool. And Grand Trunk Single Parachute Nylon Hammock, crimson and khaki. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dutz. And Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.